Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling for Leighton Kling Behind the Scenes. Coming up on this week's episode, we're joined by Tim Baines, the CEO and co-founder of Compatio. Compatio is a company that really attempts to bring that in-store small retailer experience to an online platform by allowing companies and retailers to customize product listings online. Sounds like a mouthful. It's really cool technology, actually. We're going to talk about specialty retailers who are using it. Retail that doesn't often get talked about, things like bike shops, for example, or fishing outfitters. Some really interesting technology, but also some interesting use cases as well coming from that interview. Also, we're going to talk about Tractor Supply Company expanding a store inside a store concept, so to speak, after a pilot in a couple of different locations. That'll be in our Looking Ahead segment. And in news, Sherwin-Williams released their latest earnings on Tuesday morning. That's a retailer we haven't talked a lot about over the past couple of years, so we're going to break that seal in our news segment. A quick reminder, you can like us, rate us on any podcast listening service platform. If you like our show, it helps other people to find out about the Retail Focus Podcast and the interviews we bring you every week. Additionally, you can check us out on social media at Retail Podcast, where I've posted some pictures from my journey to Asheville for business this week. Certainly hope you enjoy those on social media, which is otherwise usually run by Leighton, in fact. So let's talk about Sherwin-Williams. As I mentioned, it's been a while since we've discussed them, but we're big fans of their stability as a retailer and also their highly underrated merchandising. You know, this harkens back to last week's episode where we discussed lighting with Daniel Gold, and many of the newer generation Sherwin-Williams locations do have that specialized lighting near paint swatches and idea generation tools. Really, if you haven't been to a Sherwin-Williams in a while, merchandising is spot on. It's a lot different than just going to a paint section, for example, in the likes of a Home Depot or Lowe's. Not saying they do a bad job in terms of merchandising, but Sherwin-Williams is on point in that regard. And it's very easy as far as this company is concerned to focus on their B2B sales, but their sales to the public continue to be robust, as we see in this quarter, and they're fueled in large part by this excellent merchandising we speak of. People can really go in and visualize different projects that they're willing to embark on, especially with, I'm going to say it again, the nesting phenomenon that was started with the pandemic last March. And Sherwin-Williams has indeed benefited from that. We'll talk about the number breakdown there, not only through their own retail sales, but certainly with their partnerships with other home improvement retailers as well. Now, let's start off with the most basic numbers. Their overall net sales as a company were up 12.3% over 2020's Q1. However, the number we are far more interested in for the purpose of this podcast, comp sales at their retail stores. This was up a decent amount, 8.2% year over year. This includes stores open at least a year in North America, United States, and Canada. They don't really separate those as far as the numbers are concerned. Now, on a two-year stack, this was even more impressive, with comps having been up 7.4% in Q1 of 2020 over the first quarter of 2019. That was even before pandemic effects hit. Over the last year, for Sherwin-Williams, their commercial sales have been somewhat stagnant or even negative as people increasingly turn to those DIY projects rather than hiring out during the pandemic. And I think that's something that you saw a little bit of throughout the home improvement sector, although Home Depot and Lowe's both noted some strength in their pro divisions. But as far as Sherwin-Williams is concerned, their commercial business was back into positive growth this last quarter, up low single digits year over year. But that DIY business, that's a major growth driver for them. As a result of the push to DIY, DIY sales for their retail locations at Sherwin-Williams were up double digits over the first quarter of 2020. This also parlayed itself into their wholesale business through what they call their consumer brands group. Basically, this is sales of products to other outlets like, for example, Lowe's, who they have a partnership with, Consumer Brands Group sales across all regions were up 25%, which brings it well into line with what you're seeing from a lot of the major home improvement outlets over the last year plus. You're seeing those not only double-digit comps, but comps in the area of 20 to 25%. Now, management did say on the call, might want to pump your brakes a little bit as far as DIY sales are concerned. They expect to see some softening of sales to DIY customers as the year progresses, at least in terms of growth. You look currently sitting at 15 to 20% of their retail sales through the stores. That is to say about a fifth of their sales are to those DIY customers at their retail stores. They expect that share to turn back down a bit as growth slows. You're looking at maybe single digits in terms of growth for DIY sales as the year progresses, at least according to management. Management also expecting their commercial business to show signs of picking up. And to that end, actually, they saw early signs of that in this first quarter. Here's the thing. They mentioned sales of spraying equipment was up double digits, and they noted on the call historically, this is a predictor of future demand for their commercial customers because commercial customers are coming in, buying this equipment with the anticipation that they'll get a number of jobs in the coming months. So as they begin to stock up on equipment, usually for Sherwin-Williams purposes, that means paint sales are sure to follow, at least historically, that's what it's meant. So management may be a little bit bearish on the DIY front going forward in 2021, but certainly expecting continued expansion in their commercial customers as far as that's concerned. Now, looking at their brick and mortar footprint, they do continue steady growth there. They opened 11 net new retail stores in North America during the quarter. That added to their existing 4,774 stores in North America. For a retailer that doesn't earn a lot of press, and for a retailer that honestly we're guilty of not talking a lot about, that is a lot of retail locations. Part of that is they do business in a ton of small and mid-sized markets. In certain circumstances, they've got stores in cities as small as 3,000 to 4,000 in some of those legacy retail locations. Now, after COVID gave them a bit of a speed bump in 2020 regarding new store openings, they do plan on 80 net new openings or thereabouts for the full 2021 year. So a pretty decent increase for them, right around 1% to 2%, which they said they predict kind of for the next couple of years. Again, 1% to 2% location growth. However, in terms of the biggest news undercurrent and something that was maybe downplayed a little bit on the call as far as we were concerned regarding their retail stores was their wave of price increases they began rolling out February 1st. Now, in North America, that meant increases of around 3% to 4% across their product portfolio. As a result of these increases, they did realize a net benefit of 1.7% in the first quarter. Of course, the price increases being rolled out in the middle of the quarter, but expectations of 2% or more of a benefit in ensuing quarters. Maybe some of that business is chased off by the price increases, but they anticipate a lot of the business to stick around. And price increases have been a consistent topic of late. I think this is something we're probably going to end up talking more about as the year progresses. Concerns over inflation potentially eclipsing 3% in terms of consumer goods in 2021, maybe a little bit higher than that in some grocery sectors as well. So just something to keep an eye on. Sherwin-Williams trying to get ahead of that curve a little bit with those price increases in February. So when you take the earnings call and the content on the call as a whole, what can we extrapolate? What can we take away from this? We talked about Sherwin-Williams having nearly 5,000 retail store locations, so they in and of themselves are a significant retailer, but oftentimes Sherwin-Williams can tell us a little bit more about home improvement retail as a whole. Well, the first takeaway is, at least as far as the first quarter is concerned, DIY sales through all channels remain strong as they have for the duration of the pandemic. However, as we talked about, Sherwin-Williams, a little bit bearish in their outlook for that continued DIY growth. And you kind of wonder if that's going to cross over to other home improvement retailers as well. These retailers, as I mentioned earlier, you've seen increases year over year, 20 to 25%. Some retailers into the 30% range, just like Ace Hardware, for example. in terms of that year-over-year sales growth since the start of the pandemic, you have to wonder if the backing off of those DIY projects might have some impact on sales growth in 2021. Now, granted, for some of the larger retailers, the Home Depots, the Lowe's, the Menards of the world, they might be able to make some of that back with their pro customers beginning to bulk up a little bit. You wonder how that might translate to Ace or the likes of True Value as an example. One thing that management noted from Sherwin-Williams, and I think this is an important takeaway in terms of the macro view of retail in general, they feel really, really good. They talked for a bit about owning, in fact, their own fleet of delivery vehicles and semi-trailers. And essentially, there's really implied concern on the call from management at Sherwin-Williams going forward that logistics will continue to become a little bit stickier. Prices will go up, delays might be seen, and that is especially the case if you're going through a third party. And so what Sherwin-Williams leadership was really saying is that they're pretty comfortable in the fact that they own so much of their own fleet, they can kind of get past some of those logistics issues that might plague other retailers, especially with more deliveries to households, especially with more deliveries to warehouses and the like for e-commerce fulfillment. So their logistics being vertically integrated as they are, they can take out those bottlenecks, they can control costs to an extent. Other retailers might be at the whim of the logistics marketplace if they're using the third parties. And finally, they noted as though they feel like the population movement to southern markets, Florida, Texas were mentioned on the call, they believe that's going to be a net positive for them in the long run. And they mentioned that, yes, some of their new store growth has been there. A lot of it, in fact, has been in Canada when you look at the last couple of years. But they feel as though they can quickly scale up with new stores in the southern U.S. and talked about it as such on the call. They said, hey, look, our relationships with area contractors, those are strong enough to trigger quick expansion in those southern markets if need be. They called out specifically their southeastern and southwestern regions and their regional directors and their expansion efforts there as being positive. And certainly this is a retailer that's not looking to stand pat in terms of number of brick and mortar stores. Interestingly, we discussed this with HEB just a few weeks ago. HEB, of course, announcing that they're moving into the DFW market. And some onlookers are saying, hey, this is a great move for them because you've got other retailers, the likes of Kroger and Walmart, have really kind of put the hold on brick and mortar expansion. Sherwin-Williams not in that category. They are constantly looking at expansion. Again, you're looking at 1% to 2% brick and mortar location growth, and it wouldn't be a surprise to see that growth happen where population growth is also happening and where you see people generally moving in the United States. So you look at Texas, you look at Florida, you look at the Mountain West also as a growing area for Sherwin-Williams. So three really macro level takeaways. First of all, the idea of opening new brick and mortar locations, especially in the southern United States. Second, logistics and vertically integrating those logistics. And third, those DIY sales. I think there's some strong takeaways from the Sherwin-Williams call as a whole. Now, coming up after this break, as I mentioned at the beginning, we're going to be joined by Tim Baines, the CEO and co-founder of Compatio. He's going to discuss a little bit about the intricacies of a specialty retailer transitioning to an e-commerce space, growing their market. He mentions one retailer that started in a town of 900 that now has a nationwide, even global outreach as a result of some of these product matching platforms that Compatio offers. Very interesting stuff. The crux of many retail experiences, especially those for smaller retailers, but also retailers we've discussed on the show like REI or PGA Tour Superstore, has to do with associate expertise. Customers get a value-added experience by going into the store and benefiting from the expertise of associates who are guiding them through the selection and eventually, hopefully, the purchase process. But what happens if a retailer wishes to expand their market or reach those who are predominantly purchasing through e-commerce? Well, here to discuss How to effectively translate this expertise to a company's e-commerce platform is Tim Baines, the CEO and co-founder of Compatio. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Trent. Glad to be here.
So first, just so our listeners kind of know a bit about the background, a bit about the perspective that you bring, I was wondering if you could discuss a little bit about what Compatio does on the day-to-day.
Yeah, absolutely. Compatio is focused on helping the buyer find just the right products that go together to form a personalized solution for them. We focus on products that have some complexity. For example, building up a fly rod outfit where you're going to choose a rod and a reel and a line, or a bike where you're going to outfit your adventure bike with pannier system and a hydration pack and maybe change the gearing. We're focused on products that have some complexity. And for those kinds of products, there is oftentimes a ton of information, but very little knowledge about how it goes together available at the point of sale. So Compatio addresses that gap with our platform.
Yeah, so you gave a few examples, but I was wondering if you could walk us through kind of a greater example in terms of where a retailer, small, large, whatever size, adopted your systems, how you went through implementing that on the back end, and then the process behind activating it for the end user, which is the customer in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to focus on Madison River Fishing Company. They're a great example of the type of product that we focus on, and also a company that is getting quite a big benefit from having our technology running on their site. Madison River Fishing Company is a fly fishing equipment seller, reseller, e-commerce site, and our technology running on their site runs as a recommender. When a user clicks on, let's say, a fly fishing rod, our system can recommend exactly the correct reels and fly line and leader and tippet that go with that specific rod. We also give them the ability to home in on exactly the right kind of rod based on the attributes of the rod. And implementing that, Compatio is available in two ways. In the first case, we actually have pre-built taxonomies covering a large number of products in a few industries. For example, fly fishing equipment. And in that case, our taxonomy and our product database is available out of box. And that's what we had available for Madison River. So to implement there, we installed our Shopify plugins on their Shopify site. That's a very quick process, generally takes a few hours. And once our plugins are running on their site, our recommender and our cross-seller and our bundler, once they're running, our system will automatically map their products to our taxonomy and know how to cross-sell and recommend the correct products that relate to the product that the customer is currently looking at. So from the standpoint of Madison River, they actually do almost nothing to maintain our system on their site. They maintain their own catalog, obviously, but we provide the rich data that is needed to drive the system and deliver just the right experience to the end user, as well as the logic and the rules that helps map or helps the customer find products that go together. Our system knows how to do that. It knows how to recommend just the right products that are not only technically correct, technically accurate, i.e., for a given fly rod, they come in certain sizes. They're designed for specific purposes, like dry fly presentation. Our system knows how to go find the matching reels that would go with that specific weight of fly rod and even optimize the reel selection for the same purpose as the fly rod was intended for. And so our system knows how to figure that out and calculate that on the fly. So the maintenance burden for Madison River is almost nothing.
So I want to ask you, of course, and by the way, for our listeners out there, if you are or planning to be near a computer at some point, you can check out the website mrfc.com. So we're talking about Madison River Fishing Company here. By the way, Ennis, Montana, which is a gorgeous area, but the town less than 1,000 people. So they really are expanding their reach through e-commerce. If you go and search for a rod, let's say, it's not only reels, fly lines, leaders, etc., but you've got so many products that are compatible, so many products that aren't. When you're building the taxonomy, as you say, for a particular set of products, whether they be bikes, whether they be fly fishing equipment, what goes into that on the back end? Because it's not just a circumstance, as I understand it, where you're saying, well, this item fits this and it's a one at a time thing. As you say, it's relatively maintenance free for the retailer, at least.
Yeah. So some of that gets into our secret sauce, but I will say that the product graph system that we've designed, it sits on a graph database that understands or can represent relationships between things. We have an additional layer of intelligence that sits on top of that great graph database and is able to calculate whether things fit together or not. That's based on, to a certain extent, product expertise that we collect working with experts in that domain, let's say fly fishing or bicycling. That expertise gets encoded into our system in many cases. Some things we can learn using machine learning, but I want to be careful to point out that much of the kind of stuff that we do is not really amenable to an AI or a machine learning approach. It would be nice if that were the case, but it's not the case. It's really hard to solve these problems, or virtually impossible, with machine learning or AI. You have to have some expertise baked into the system to begin with. We do that, and we are able to define in a very efficient way ways to represent relationships between products or between classes of products so that our system can calculate whether any two items within, let's say, two different categories of product, whether any two items go together or not, and how well they go together. You know, I like to say in the cycling world that almost anything will go together if you have a cutting torch and a TIG welder, but some things work better together than others, and our system knows how to figure out, A, whether they will go together at all, and then how well they will go together, and how well they will suit a specific purpose or need.
Yeah, you can get anything to be compatible, I guess, with duct tape and bubble gum, I suppose. But you want it to be compatible outside the box. Just from a consumer experience standpoint, if you're visiting one of these websites, because I'm sure for our listeners, it's like, well, this sounds pretty similar to something. It's like customers also bought this. How does it go above and beyond just those recommendation sections that we see on basically every macro e-commerce retailer site?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we're all familiar with those, you know, customer also bought those types of recommendation systems. Compatio's system literally knows how to identify, number one, what the best related category will be. If you're looking at, let's say, you know, to stick with fly fishing, since we've already talked about that, if you're looking at a fly rod, our system knows that with fly rods, chances are actually reasonably high that you're going to be interested in, let's say, a reel, a fly reel, and you're probably going to be interested in fly line as well, just as a category. And we learned that relevancy on the fly using machine learning. That is something that you can learn on the fly. And many other recommenders do learn things like that on the fly. Is it a relevant category or not? But our system goes deeper than that. And once we figure out that, A, if you're looking at a rod, you're also going to be looking at a reel. Inside of that, our system can figure out which reels you're most likely to be interested in based on the relationships between those products. We know that if you're looking at a 3-weight fly rod, you're going to need a 3-weight or close to a 3-weight reel. Our system knows that. So it is only going to recommend 3-weight reels. Unlike traditional recommenders that are looking at patterns and how people are buying items and how often they buy them together, and or using collaborative filtering to look at what other customers like you have also bought, our system has the intelligence to function really like an experienced sales agent working on the floor of a retail shop. Our system knows that this product will go with what you're buying. So it's only going to recommend those things that will actually fit. And it'll recommend, of the list of things that will fit, the things that it will fit the best.
Now, of course, we can draw just probably general conclusions about the positive impacts that this might have on an e-commerce site. Reduced returns. We've talked about returns so much, especially since holiday season 2020. We've seen the returns balloon. Other than maybe reduced returns, what's the impact been for a retailer like Madison River Fishing Company who integrates this type of platform onto their e-commerce site?
Yeah, so the system has been live there for about 6 months. And We, of course, collect analytics on how well it's doing and what percentage of their overall sales are being recommended by our system and how those sales are growing. Some of that information obviously is confidential and I won't go into it too much. However, I can say two things. Number one is that we're watching the behavior of the system and how frequently the items that we're recommending are being bought by their customers and the numbers of products the customers buy, what percentage are being recommended by us, they go up. They've gone up every single month that the system has been live. So it's clear that their customers are learning to rely on this technology, number one. At the same time, we're looking at and constantly analyzing their ROI, the value that they're getting back in terms of the amount of revenue that our system is recommending and being bought by their customers. And it goes up every month. It just steadily, every single month, it sets a new record. And right now it's around 11x the cost. So it's getting a really nice ROI on their site.
And again, I should mention, this is a site with, if you go and look, there's easily five figures worth of SKUs there. So it's not just like a small website with a few products. There are a ton of products out there. Speaking of products, though, I did want to ask, are there products, you mentioned, obviously, we've talked about fly fishing, bikes, that type of thing. Are there products or product categories that this type of system works better for than others? And what are kind of the go-forward limitations as far as how far you can go with this type of program or platform, if you will?
Yeah, that's a great question, Trent. So we focus on products that have some complexity. If you think about the way a bike gets built up, either you start with a frame and you're going to add other components to it, or you're going to start with a bike, a fully built bike, and you're going to accessorize it with a pannier system or change the gearing or whatever. Those are good examples of the kinds of products that our system does really well with. There's what we call the solution that the customer buys is a collection of several things that must work together or are really suited for one another. They don't have to be physically attached to one another. For example, in cycling, to take an example, if you're buying a, let's say, a Salsa cutthroat gravel or adventure bike, our system knows to recommend clothing, attire, jerseys, helmets, shoes that are actually suitable for gravel riding or adventure riding, as opposed to, let's say, something that's really targeted for road riding. So those kinds of domains where the product is reasonably complex, there's a set of products that go together to fit your solution, whether they're physically connected to one another or not, but there's sort of compatibility or suitability relationships between them. Those are the domains where Compatio does really well. Now, I'm not going to say that we could take on, let's say, the configuration of a server rack, you know, to be part of Amazon's data center. Our system is not going to handle that kind of complexity, at least not yet. But anywhere where you've got a collection of somewhere from, you know, three to a couple of dozen, or even in the case of a cycle, a bicycle, you know, you've got about 45 components that must all come together to build out a bike. Anywhere you've got that level of complexity and that covers a lot of ground, our system is going to really shine in a domain like that.
So coming into this interview, I always like to wrap up by asking kind of what's next in terms of the technology, what's next in terms of the company. Something that you mentioned to me just before we started recording was this smart builder platform that, when you look even at Madison River, is something that's going to be launching on their site within the next few days. What's the difference between this and the rest of the product suite that Compatio has to offer?
Yeah, so what's been live at our customer sites up to this point is our recommender system that runs at the bottom of the product detail page and recommends products that go with what you're looking at, and that's pairwise compatibility. We also have a smart bundler that can generate a bundle of two to three products that go together, that go with the thing you're looking at. And then we have a cross-seller that is running. If you click and add an item to the cart, our cross-seller will pop up and show you things that go with what you've just bought to help you build out that solution. And obviously, you know, increase the size of your order. Those have been out and running for some months now. What we're releasing, we've already announced the release, and will be going live at its very first site here in the next few days, is Smart Builder, as you talked about. Smart Builder really is the configurator. Again, it won't handle something like a server rack yet, but it allows for the kinds of products that we've talked about. It takes the user through a flow. Let's say starting with a fly rod, we recommend then exactly the correct reel. They add the reel to the build. It then suggests fly line and leader and tippet, and even can recommend waders and some other stuff that go with the fly rod that you're adding to your build. It can actually go on infinitely and keep adding more stuff to your build the way a really good sales rep will do when you're standing in the store, and they'll keep asking you whether you want more to go with what you just bought. Our system can function in exactly the same way. Obviously, we want to draw it to an end at some point so the user consummates the deal, but we can allow them to build out a full solution that suits their needs perfectly using Smart Builder.
I'm attempting to use it now at least, but it really is kind of a neat linear flow where I've just chosen a fly rod, I'm choosing a reel right now, then I go to fly lines, then I go to leaders, and then it shows me optional add-ons, as you mentioned, so additional potential additions to cart. Beyond this tool, though, what is the future for these type of smart recommendation platforms that go just beyond the regular plain Jane AI recommendation platforms that we've all seen?
One of the things that we've been aware of for some time, if you look at trends in commerce, 10 years ago, you could walk into a specialty retail store and there's somebody really smart behind the counter that knew everything about the products and would ask you questions about what do you want? What are you trying to do? You're maybe buying a DSLR camera and they'd ask you and help you find the right body and then recommend lenses that go and so forth. Those folks that sit in those specialty retail stores, and especially folks that really know product lines and know how to recommend just the right stuff, those folks are becoming more and more rare all the time. We've all had the experience of walking into a physical store and finding it hard to find somebody and also get the answers to our questions. As we've made the shift to digital commerce, that experience is magnified. When you go to an e-commerce site of any kind, you can be overwhelmed with the information, but without the knowledge, it can be really difficult to make a selection that you're confident in if the products have any complexity at all. And so where Compatio, we see ourselves as really filling in that gap between a really well-informed in-store experience and an online or digital experience where you need this real knowledge to help you as the buyer make just the right selections of your products. And again, I think AI helps a lot. AI, machine learning, the traditional recommenders can learn a lot about patterns and how other people buy or how they have bought in the past. And they can recommend some really good things. The hot seller this week, they'll want to recommend, but they don't understand the complexity of things that go together when you've got more than a couple of items. Anytime you start combining more than two or three items, the complexity, the combinatorics of the numbers of different solutions that you can possibly build, the combinatorics drive the number of solutions through the ceiling. It's impossible to maintain those if you have any more than a few hundred SKUs. So our system allows the end user to buy exactly what they want. They don't have to take a fixed bundle. They can go choose from any one of a number of different categories of items or subcategories of items. They can choose exactly what they want, be totally in control in how they put that solution together, and have the confidence to know that it does actually go together, that it'll fit, and they could take it home and it'll work and they don't have to send it back. So that's where I think Compatio is actually quite different from the systems that are out there on the market today.
We love specialty retail. We especially love platforms that help out specialty retailers. And Tim, thank you so much for joining us and walking us through this platform today.
Yeah, thanks, Trent. Glad to talk.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We thank Tim for joining us on the podcast. Just as an aside, he's out of Springfield, Missouri. One doesn't think about Springfield, Missouri as a retail hub, but of course that is the home of One O'Reilly Auto Parts. Springfield, a place very near and dear to me as well. That is a fun town if you ever get a chance to visit. A fun town and a growing town as well. So let's turn our attention to a retailer that actually has a pretty good presence in and around the Springfield, Missouri area. We're talking about Tractor Supply Company. Tractor Supply Company had a pilot in 10 stores in conjunction with Carhartt, which of course is an apparel manufacturer, typically thought of as workwear, although in recent years their clothing has kind of become popular outside of the workwear set. They started the store-in-store, shop-in-shop concept in 10 stores with Carhartt. So far, the pilot has gone well enough to where they're expanding that to over 100 Tractor Supply Company stores in the next year, with an additional 25 stores rolling out in 2022. At least those are the plans for now. The reason I'm looking ahead is oftentimes it's not unlike farm and home retailers to have something approximating a store-in-store setup, but usually it's not for clothing. Usually it's for other items, maybe power tools, for example, or farm and home tools. You see sometimes those store-in-store concepts there. But when you take a look at the pictures of these Carhartt kind of store-in-store concepts, it is a significant amount of square footage in these Tractor Supply Company stores that in and of themselves oftentimes don't devote a ton of square footage to clothing. They've always had clothing. It's always been a product that they've sold, but really kind of expanding this concept out by several hundred more square feet. The press release that came out this week noted you're looking at about 1,200 to 1,400 square feet at each of these pilot locations that'll be taken up by these Carhartt store inside a store concepts. And they also noted that they'll have the benefit of some different, of course, signage and branding, but maybe some different products as well as this partnership strengthens. Really anxious to see if this is something that other farm and home retailers begin to seek out and do with, maybe if not Carhartt, other similar manufacturers. You would expect something like this potentially from Boot Barn or a Cavender's or someone that's a little bit stronger in the fashion area of that farm and home. But with this and Tractor Supply, obviously it's worked in their current 10 stores. I'm very anxious to see not only how Tractor Supply expands this, but whether you see regional chains, Tractor Supply, of course, being the largest farm and home retailer in terms of locations, if you see other regional chains really pick up on this. Atwoods in the Southern Plains, for example, would come to mind. Big R, who has locations throughout the U.S. in various different iterations through various different owners. And so that's something I'm really going to be kind of keeping a close eye on is farm and home retail. You've heard me say it before on the show, but I feel as though it's an underrated sector of retail. You can really get a good idea of how strong the retail landscape is by how well those stores are doing. And they're oftentimes in small to mid-sized markets, which I continue to attest is basically the heart and soul of retail. You can tell so much by how those stores in those markets are doing in terms of the overall economic standing of retail in the United States. So kind of an interesting concept there from Carhartt. Again, these locations look absolutely gorgeous with over 1,000 square feet dedicated to Carhartt. And really kind of interested to see where this goes for all farm and home retail. Well, that'll do it for us here on the podcast. And once again, a big thanks to Leighton behind the scenes for doing a lot of the prep work and handling social media. I'm Trent saying so long until next week's podcast. Everyone have a great next 7 days.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.